Jesus Christ is born. Jesus Christ is born. Jesus Christ is born.
Follow the star to a place unexpected. Would you believe after all we've projected? A child in a manger, lowly and small, the weakest of all, unlikeliest hero, wrapped in his mother's shawl, just a child. Is this what we've waited for? 'Cause how many kings stepped down from their thrones? How many lords have their homes? How many graves have become the least for him? And how many gods have poured out their hearts to romance a world that is torn all apart? How many fathers gave up their sons for him? Bringing our gifts for the newborn Savior, all that we have, whether costly or mean, because we believe. Gold for his honor and frankincense for his pleasure, and myrrh for the cross he'll suffer. Do you believe? Is this who we've waited for?
Morning, everybody. All right, let's pray. Dear God, amen. All right, you can have a seat. Couple things first. We have a message with pretty deep water today, and it's it can be a little bit controversial. So I wanted to start off with something really, really light and talk about politics for a second. So I just wanted to say we're in the Christmas season, and a mask mandate was overturned in the last day or two, and the people who are gloating and lamenting today are the reverse of the people who were gloating and lamenting about 2 months ago. And if you remember, we talked about sex a couple of weeks ago, and the point of that message was we are a combination of all kinds of things. We're made up of all different parts, our dreams, our talents, our passions, everything else. The problem, what we get into trouble with sex is we take a little piece of that pie and think that's the most important thing about us. Politics is the exact same way, and we've been told that those things are the most important thing about us, so we continue to fight and gloat and lament and just continue to fight and think that we're very, very divided. And then we have a thing that happened with these tornadoes where it just cuts a deep wound through the middle of the country, and then we realize the things that are actually the most important things about us. So as we move into the Christmas season, I just want to say we started this whole series on the Sermon on the Mount with the Beatitudes, and the second to last one is that we are to be peacemakers. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't disagree. That doesn't mean that we can't have our different opinions. That doesn't mean that we can't yell and scream at each other. I had a great story the other day. My boy and his buddy on the basketball team screamed and yelled at each other in the locker room. They were angry over something that happened in basketball, and then it ended and they said, "All right, I'll see you later." And the other one goes, "See ya." Because the most important thing about us is that we're in relationship. We are all created in the image of God, and we are all human beings. And there are a lot of people that are hurting right now, and it's got nothing to do with a mask. Okay? So let's give each other a break. Let's give ourselves a break and bring some peace into this season, right? Amen. Okay, where we're going the next couple weeks, today we get the privilege of talking about divorce. And that's just great. But this is one of those things, it's a two-part message because I didn't want to keep us here until 2 or 3. If you want to, it's done, so I'm cool with that. So when we're done, we'll think about it. But the thing is, usually when I break them into two, they stand alone. This one doesn't, okay? So what I would really, really suggest, you understand with religion and spirituality that you can take anything and you can be offended by it. I went and I watched a guy speak once, and it was all about helping the poor, and it was all about following Jesus, and it was all about this, and we left, and the woman we were with said, "Well, he sure hates the Catholic Church." I have no idea what she was talking about. It must have been an offhanded comment 5 minutes in, and she shut off. So there's a really good chance that today there may be an issue. Or the next time there may be an issue. But what I would ask is that you use them as a whole. Today we have part one, and the other part, okay, we see this is why it gets long, Shelby. So the thing is, when we start to talk about faith, the Bible is an invitation into a conversation, okay? So what we do is we wrestle with it. All from through the history, when the first books of the Torah were written down or told in an oral tradition, it was all in a group, and they'd all talk about what these things meant, and they'd all talk about who we are in the story, and they'd wrestle with them, and they'd take them apart. That's what this is. So if there's a problem today, don't just take it down the road. Wrestle with it. Wrestle with me. It'll be super fun. I promise. Okay. Here's where we are. So here's what we're doing. Today we have part one. Next Sunday, Joy is bringing a message called Gifts. Then we have Christmas Eve, where we're going to talk about Genesis, because Genesis is where every Christmas Eve story starts, right? And then the day after Christmas, we're going to also talk about divorce, part two, and then we're going to have communion. Okay, so that's where we are. And then January starts the New Year's and the manifesto and all of that stuff. So that's where we're going. Divorce. I know you're excited. Me too. Matthew 5, 31, 32. It has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality makes her the victim of adultery, and anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. See, it's easy. It's easy. Okay, now, you see this follows the pattern. Jesus says, this is what you've been told, but I'm about to open all of this up and talk about what this is really talking about. Because like with the raca and with the murder was about our hearts, right? And with the adultery, that's about our hearts too. It's about this thing that you could see opened up to what you couldn't see. And that's when we start to get into all of this stuff. That's where Jesus is taking us. The context of this, super cool. In the day where Jesus walked into, there were two famous rabbis, okay? And their names were Hillel and Shammai. When you hear these conversations to Jesus, when they ask him a question, essentially what everyone is saying is, whose side are you on? Are you siding with Hillel? Are you siding with Shammai? That's what the thing is. Usually, Hillel was the more liberal. And in this case, Hillel was saying that any complaint was a cause for divorce. Shammai is more conservative, right? And he was saying things like, only sexual misdemeanor authenticated by witnesses. Isn't that messed up? I just love those words. You know, that opens it up. Remember the story where they brought the woman to Jesus? And they say this woman was caught? That's what we're talking about. So Shammai's was, there's one reason for divorce. Hillel was a bit more liberal, okay? And people took sides, and it's really just like us today. People would take sides for the interpretation. They would follow different teachers, different authors. You know how you pick a book and you pick a book and you're a Joel Osteen and I'm a Rob Bell and all of this stuff. We do that. We do that. And that goes all the way back. And by the way, there's nothing at all wrong with this. It's a history of wrestling with all this stuff. Sometimes you might be a Joel Osteen 10 years ago and you're not a Joel Osteen today. Happens. It happens. This is part of the thing. There's nothing wrong as long as ultimately we're following Jesus. Paul is saying, you can talk about Apollos, you follow Apollos, you follow Paul, as long as we're always looking at Jesus. That's the important thing, okay? So, as long as we're following Jesus, the Holy Spirit, abiding, the word that we use is with. We are walking with Jesus, okay? That's the story. Okay, outside of that, we can start to look at how people interpret things. And here's another, by the way. No matter which, we have a word. Let's say there's two sides to an issue. There's a word for the one that we think is right. And it's right, isn't it? If I believe it, it's the right side. Right? That's how we are. And then if we switch sides at any point, that side's the right side. Because we can't even fathom why anybody would be thinking that, right? That's just kind of part of human beings. Okay, in Jesus' day, all of these questions are about what side are you on? Who are you lining up with? And the cool thing about it is the answer is neither, because he took both sides. In each question, it could be different. It could be different here. It could be different here. Usually, he sided with Hillel. He was much more of a liberal person. Obviously, as you know, he was sitting down with tax collectors. He was talking to women. He was all of this stuff. But in this case, it's Shammai. It's Shammai. He lines up right with Shammai. Now, the interesting part, we'll get into that. But have you ever wondered, my biggest problem and why I couldn't come to faith for a really long time is two people reading the same book are arguing all the time. And have you ever wondered how that is? They're reading the same Bible, they have the same story, and they're arguing. They're taking wildly different viewpoints. How is that? And this is not new either. I struggled with it. You struggle with it. Everybody struggled with it back through time. And the reason for that is it's about interpretation. And anytime, just a little side note, anytime anybody says to you, "I just teach the Bible," they are not telling you the truth. That's a disingenuous thing because there's interpretation involved in everything. And if you don't think so, the translators of the Bible that you're reading had to interpret that. So you're reading an interpretation. Okay? So all of these things happen. So we have to interpret it. That's how we start to disagree. Okay? Every translation is an interpretation. And what goes into the interpretation is our experience, our maturity, how long we've read it. You understand that the story that you read 10 years ago and you thought, "Man, I get it." Then 5 years later you go, "I didn't get that at all." And now you're like, "Man, I didn't even see that." It's like your eyes are being opened new all the time. That is part of the interpretation of it. The demographic, and now there's a super interesting story. Well, we'll get there. Demographic season, the season of your life that you're in, everything that makes you you. When you read the Bible, you bring all of that. Okay, and so did the translators, and so did Hillel, and so did Shammai. Okay, so here's a cool illustration of that. Has anybody ever heard of the parable of the prodigal son? The parable of the prodigal son is this kid goes to his dad, his rich king dad, and says, "I wish that you were dead now, and I'd like my side of the inheritance so I can leave you." And the father says, "Okay, here you go." And the kid leaves and blows it all, as a kid would do, right? So the kid blows it all. Now, the kid leaves, there's a famine, he squanders it all this stuff, and then the kid says, "The pigs are eating better than I do, so I'm going to go back to my dad and I'm going to beg to be treated like the pigs," one of his servants. So he comes back. The father sees him coming a long way off, runs after him, hugs him, brings him back, and the kid doesn't even get a chance to say, "I've changed. I really get it." He doesn't care. The father doesn't care. Okay? So he brings him back in. And he says, "We're going to kill the fatted calf," which is an awesome, "and we're going to throw a great big party for him." And now the other son, the prodigal son's brother, is mad because he didn't leave and get to have all the fun that the younger brother was having. And he didn't do anything wrong all along. So the story ends with the brother outside going, "I'm not going in your party because you're treating him this way, and I never did anything to you." And the father says, "Everything I have is yours all along." Okay? He was gone, and now he's back, and we're going to have a party. And that's how it ends. We don't know if the older brother goes in. We don't know any of that stuff. Here's the cool story. This is why I tell you this. There was a study done. If you live in Russia or the Eastern Bloc countries, that kind of thing, you read that story as the kid left and there was a famine. They say, why did he lose all of his money? Well, there was a famine and there wasn't enough stuff to go around. If you are American and you read that story, you say, he blew it all. It's personal responsibility here. He went out and he blew all of it. He squandered it. Interesting what we take, right? Depending where we live and our experience. Both of them are true. But anyway, I used to read it as the prodigal son. I used to read it as the one who left and had to come back and all of that stuff. Then, once I started to come to church all the time, I started to read it from the point of view of the brother. Which, if you are the brother, And I use this one all the time because Angel and I talk about it all the time. You have a really big problem with the parable of the vineyard owner, the vineyard workers, because you think, I'm following all the rules, I should get more. And that was me. And it shouldn't be for everyone. It should be for the people that are following the rules. So then it became about the brother. Now, I just see it as the parable of the forgiving father, because that's, I believe, what the story's about. Okay? We can find ourselves everywhere in it, but that's what it is. Philippians 2:12 says, therefore, my dear friends, have you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. He goes on a little bit later in Philippians and says, all of us then who are mature should take such a view of things. This is revolutionary what he's about to say here. Okay, and it really calls into question all of the fighting that we do. He says, I think that if you're mature, you should see it this way. And if on some point you think differently, that too God will make clear to you. He's not fighting anybody. He's saying, you'll get it. And I think what else he's saying is, maybe I'll have to get it too. Because Paul's changed a lot, right? We change. So the things that we're fighting that we think are non-negotiable, that everybody has to believe the way we believe, in 10 years we might see it a little bit differently. Because that too, the Holy Spirit will make clear to us. So, sometimes our experiences, our hearts change and we interpret the text differently. We learn some things. We see some side notes. We have a Damascus Road moment where Jesus stops us and says, you're reading this all wrong and you're causing a problem. And then you got to change. You don't believe the same thing about the same way about everything that you did 20 years ago or 1 year ago or this morning. Let's be fair about that. And if you do, I think there's a problem. I think there's a problem. Then there's no growth. There's no learning happening here. Okay? This is okay, and this is natural. And Philippians 3:15 says you can hold it and them loosely. We can allow growth. And yourself. We can allow growth. We can allow the path. We can engage with the scriptures. We can engage with the Spirit. There's a moment in the scriptures where Jacob wrestles with God all night long and loses because he walks with a limp for the rest of his life. But he gets a blessing in the wrestling. That's what we're called into with the scriptures. I know you're saying, what about divorce, man? Okay, we're getting there. We're getting there. We're invited to engage, to turn the gem. You might see when you look at a different gem, it looks different from every angle. I'm reading a book right now on Genesis. Well, you're going to find out Christmas Eve what I'm reading it on. But the whole book is 8 chapters of 8 different interpretations of one verse. It's awesome. Obviously, I love that. Right? It's the coolest thing. And it just so happens to be probably my favorite verse in the Bible. It's just the coolest thing. Okay, they might be wrong. And you might be wrong. Okay, this happens. All of this to say, we're going to unpack the context of this. And then there's going to be 3 big points on what I've learned about these 2 verses in the Sermon on the Mount. Okay, and how I read and how I interpret them. Okay, first we're going to talk about Moses. Deuteronomy 24:1. If a man marries a woman who becomes displeasing to him, I just love that. Isn't it great? Because he finds something indecent about her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her, and sends her from his house. That's how all this started. Okay? So, if a woman is displeasing or indecent, and as you can see, this can be seen as permission, right? This is permission, and it can be seen as, you can take it as virtually any reason. And they were. And some examples were like if they burned the toast, if you didn't like the new hairstyle, You know what I mean? Anything that I can say is displeasing. I don't like that dress. It is very displeasing. I'm going to draw up a certificate. And what happens is then, what Moses was doing here is saying, this is happening all over the place. We have to address it. And at that point, what we do as people, if somebody gives us this much, we take this much, right? All the time. Well, you can do this. Okay, well, then I can probably do this too. And you can think of it in the Sabbath. Let's just say we want to keep the Sabbath totally. No work on a Sunday. But how it started was you can't even turn the oven on. Okay, that's why. You can't move a chair, some rabbis would say. Okay, but then one came along and said, actually, you can move the chair. Then all of a sudden, I'm setting the table, right? And then if I'm setting the table, I'm making a food because open the door an inch and I'm taking a mile every time, okay? So what you're saying, if you actually listen to that and you're paying attention, you're going, that's horrible treatment of women, right? Was it just me? Okay, it's just me. I don't know what you women are thinking, but it's terrible, okay? I can't stand it, and part of the trouble we have with the Bible is the treatment of women because of verses like this. The interesting part, and what you need to remember, is the Bible is written by people at a certain place in time. Now, these are actually clicks forward, right? Before this, they were divorcing people all over the place for anything at all. Now, Moses came along and said, you've got to write a certificate now. That's a click forward. It really is. It doesn't feel like it, but you have to do something. It has to be for something now. Now it's just about displeasing or indecent, which sounds gross. But before that, it could just be, I don't feel like it. So this is a click forward. You see, now we're going to talk about Jesus saying, you say it's about sexual immorality. See how they keep making clicks forward, saying, you just can't get rid of your wife like that, because if you did, then that put your wife in a terrible position in the culture. Now she's a divorced woman, and then we have clean, unclean issues, and everything becomes a mess. So now he's saying, okay, I get what you're doing, but we're going to make this a little harder now. Click, 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 keeps moving forward. And by the way, this is why we can't have everything in one day. Okay? Anybody who says that the Bible is horrible towards women, it is. Absolutely. However, it's also a revolutionary click forward. There are women in the genealogy of Jesus, and that did not happen at all. Jesus' closest friend was probably a woman. Okay? All of these things. Paul, the one that says women shouldn't be in leadership, is bankrolled by a woman. Jesus' ministry is bankrolled by the wife of Herod. That's interesting, isn't it? Women are funding the thing. When Paul's talking about the churches, some of the churches, the pastors, the leaders, are women. So there's context in all this stuff. It's all clicks forward. Spurgeon says, Moses insisted upon a writing of divorcement that angry passions might have time to cool, and that the separation, if it must come, might be performed with deliberation and legal formality. The requirement of a writing was to a certain degree a check upon an evil habit which was so ingrained in the people that to refuse it altogether would have been useless and would only have created another crime. See? Now you got to take time. Now you got to go through some things. So it's not just, this morning, I don't really like you. Okay? It's about, now we got to go through some things. And now, maybe, I've changed my mind. There are days when you don't like not me. But there are days when you don't really like your spouse that much. Not me. But the next day, you probably do. Or the next month. Depending on the season. Anyway, so this is cool. But then what happens in Jesus' day, this starts to get the inch and the mile. And now there's people who are just writing certificates all over the place. The legal scribes are just writing certificates all over the place. This didn't do anything. The scribes, the lawyers of the day, didn't do anything to restrain the whim of a husband. So instead they opened the door a little bit wider to this. Now, this is the context. This is what Jesus is being asked into. So what they're saying is, how do you read it? Is there a strict or is there a loose interpretation? And Jesus, in two places. Matthew 19, some Pharisees came to him to test him. They asked, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Now, by the way, these people, they have agendas. Have you ever been with somebody that asked you a question that they didn't really want your opinion? It was an agenda. They wanted to catch you. This is one of those. Haven't you read, he replied, that at the beginning the Creator said, made them male and female, and said, for this a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they're no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. Why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? Jesus replied, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not that way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. Takes a side, right? Takes a side. Mark 10. Jesus then left that place and went into the region of Judea across the Jordan. Again, crowds of people came to him, and as was his custom, he taught them. Some Pharisees came and tested him by asking, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Whenever you hear some Pharisees asked him, Your ears go up. If just some guy came up and went, can I divorce my wife? I think Jesus might have come at it really, really differently. Certainly, he would have come with a lot more compassion, because what he says is, what did Moses command you? He replied, which is usually what Jesus does. He answers with a question. They said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away. That gives their agenda, right? Okay. And send her away. It was because your hearts were hard that Moses wrote you this law, Jesus replied. But at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they're no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. You hear it again, right? You hear it again. When they're in the house again, the disciples asked Jesus about this. Now, this is his friends. These are the ones he gives a bit more access to. And they ask him about this. And he says, anyone who divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. And if she divorces her husband and marries another man, she commits adultery. These are harsh. Would you agree? These are really, really something. And what we can do is we can really take this to heart. And that's what we're going to unpack for 2 weeks now. Here come the 3 points. The first one is marriage. Okay? Marriage. In Greece and in most ancient cultures, there were whole structures and systems built around extramarital relationships. It was a common thing. You remember hearing about all of the concubines Solomon had, all the wives, all the different women that the kings would have, all of this. In the book of Esther, the king says, bring me all the women and I'm going to choose one. And she's going to have to be my wife. So you understand, this is now, it's not like he didn't have wives before. So you understand where we're talking about. The quote that you'd read if you'd do some digging is, it was accepted as natural and normal and not in the least blameworthy. Okay? So to write a certificate, cut your losses and move on. It's easy. And the institution of marriage was entered into and ended lightly. Very, very, very lightly. That was then, right? No, it was then. I'm just kidding. It was then, but wouldn't you say exactly the same thing about today? You know, we say these people, these Israelites, whatever, blah, blah, we're the same. We're the same. Them then, us now. Come on. Jesus is preaching then, and Jesus is preaching now, right? That's what I meant, Joy. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I would never yell at anybody. Okay. So with this thing happening, with extramarital relationships, where they're taking this institution, this gift from God, and treating it like it's common. Do you remember hearing those words a couple weeks ago with sex? You take something beautiful, this gift that's beautiful and sacred, and you make it common. That hurts all of us. And you can see now why Jesus would take the Shammai path in relationship to marriage. You can totally see why. You take this gift and you made it common. It's not common. And if you've ever seen or been a part of a beautiful marriage, you get it. You get it. This thing is inspirational. This thing cracks. This thing you want to be around. You want to be around that love, that kindness, that reciprocation, that respect. You want a part of that. Sometimes some people make marriage look like Genesis 1 and 2. They make it look like, man, that is just what God had in mind. Right? Okay. This, Jesus is saying, this should not be taken lightly. This should not be treated like just another contract. This should not be treated on a trial basis. Do you ever hear people say, well, give it a shot? I have. You know, I say that and it's funny, but I have. People are like, well, here's the story. Now, what happens is sometimes when we're online, you got to be a little careful. I wouldn't have paused a second last week when we weren't online, but now I pause before telling you the story. I had somebody ask if I would marry them. And I said, you want me to marry them? Well, can you tell me something about you? And they're like, she said, he doesn't really want to marry me, but I'm going to make him. And I went, well, that doesn't feel great about marriage. And she said, well, what's the difference? We'll just try. Okay. And at that point, I went, I might not be your guy. I might not be your guy. Maybe you want to take that down the road. Incidentally, I said, why are you asking me? And she says, well, I figure you're pretty cheap. Oh, no. I said, I'm not cheap. I would charge you big bucks. I didn't say that. I said, I am cheap, but not for you. Not for you. We're not going to do this. Anyway, so you don't take this in a let's see. That Jesus is saying, this isn't something that you see about. Okay? This is not the honor and dignity that we've been made. That you can have 150 concubines is not Genesis 1 and 2. Not honor and dignity of being a human being. Not made in the image of God. You can totally see it, right? Of course he picked this side. Of course he did. He saw it as the Genesis ideal. He saw it as one will leave and cleave. He saw it as one flesh. He saw them as united. Mark 10:9, therefore what God has joined together, let no one separate. I say it at the end of every wedding I do very purposefully. Very purposefully, because... Now, you say I'm cool all the time and I'm super liberal and all that stuff, and that's true. But not in marriage. Not in marriage. I agree with Jesus here. I agree with Jesus. I am a Shammai. Now, that's the line that can be taken out and not, and used to do to say some things that I'm not saying. That's why you got to come back for part two. What a great tease! What a great tease! Okay, let no one separate. Not for burned toast. Not for leaving the toilet seat up. Not for your in-laws. Not for your political ideology. Not because you gained a little weight. Not because you have a bad taste in Christmas lights. Not because of how you feel right now. Absolutely not. Now, this is very, very important. And you see how it's about a lot more than divorce. Because we have embraced a consumerism in every area of our lives, right? We have embraced this thing that says, what can I get? What can you do for me? How can you make me feel? Are you giving me what I need? Right? And if you're not, I'll find someone who will. People come into a church and say, what are you doing for me? And if you're not doing anything, if I don't like your message, if you just said a minute ago that you side with Shammai, I'm going to find somebody else who sides with Hillel. Right? We see this in everything that we do. If you're not doing what I like, I'm down the road. If you don't have the food I want, if you don't have what we are, McDonald's, have it your way. Have it your way. It's all about you. You hear that all the time. It's all about you. Okay? If it's not working right now for me, if I don't feel it, has anybody ever heard the saying, well, I love you, but I'm not in love with you? We go, next! Next. Down the road. I know. How fun. So, this is so deep in us. This is so deep in us that it requires strong, harsh language. Very strong, harsh language. Jesus, and what it can do is break our hearts and it can make us feel far from God. But what Jesus is doing right here is simply affirming respect and reverence for the promises and the commitment made. That's it. He is affirming the institution and especially the one who gave it to us. That's what it is. If I get you a Christmas gift and I give it to you here, I say, here, I got this for you. And then after everybody leaves, I'm taking the trash out and I see it in the trash. What does that say about how you feel about me? I would hope you'd throw it away at home. At least, if you're going to throw it away. But that's the thing. That's what it feels like. He's affirming the respect and the reverence for the one who joined us together. What God has joined together, let no man pull apart. Now, this is where it gets really, really fun for me. Because this is where it changes before we get into parts two and three. Next time. It takes effort. Right? Who's been married? It takes effort. It takes time. It takes patience. It takes desire. Has anybody ever heard of the love languages? Okay. The love languages, I'm gonna really boil this down. You got to read the book. But essentially what it is there's this idea called a love tank. And it gets empty and we fill each other in love. We speak in the same languages so we can fill a love tank, all this blah, 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 blah. Basically, what the love languages are is saying, even if, okay? What the love languages are saying, you might not always feel like loving them, but you love them anyway. You love them anyway, right? That's the thing, and that's the point of agape. Remember agape? Agape doesn't care if you want to. It's four different kinds of love, right? Two of them are the ones you do for your friends. One is a romantic love that's awesome. But it's not agape. Agape is the love that does it even if you don't feel like it. Agape doesn't care. If you're talking to agape and said, well, I don't really feel like loving them today. I don't really feel like making the bed, doing the dishes. I don't really feel like holding their hand today. Agape will say, I don't care. I don't care. You promised to hold their hand. You hold it. That's agape. That's agape love. We love even if. There are seasons in a marriage. There are seasons in a relationship. There's giving. There's receiving, right? Sometimes you need to give more. Sometimes you need to receive more, right? All of these things, in all these relationships, there is this. A healthy, lasting marriage requires forgiveness. About it. Forgiveness. A. Forgiveness. Humility, right? It's not about me. It's about us. It's about God. It's about this thing. This beautiful, sacred thing that we've been brought into. It requires compromise. How about it? It requires selflessness. And it requires communication. Right? It feels totally right that Jesus would take this position. Right? Now let's look, let's be honest. What do you know about Jesus? Of course he's taking this position. Of course he is. There are two different ways you can look at the world. Hope, it can be different. It can be. It can be. We can change it today. And despair, which says what? Is what it is. Says it is what it is, right? It's a difference between Sunday and Friday. And maybe you don't know what I'm talking about, but Friday, Jesus was killed, and everything that we hoped for died with him. Sunday, he came back to life, lived again, and everything was different for the rest of eternity. What Sunday says is that it is never what it is. What Sunday says is, yes, today is not just yesterday, part two. Sunday says the line, that's just who I am, is never true. Never true, because we can change. We can change, or the relationships like that. My marriage is broken. Sunday says, okay, maybe today it is. That's what Jesus is talking about. Of course, in an even if faith, one of my favorite verses in the Bible is in Habakkuk, right? Just like all of yours, too, because you read it all the time. I know. In Habakkuk is Habakkuk saying, everything's a mess. Can you fix it? Okay? Fix it because everything feels broken. Does that sound like Habakkuk's writing today, into 2020, into 2021, into 2022 world? Okay. So then God talks to him. And then Habakkuk says, you're right. You're right, because it's the only thing to say. And then he says, you know what? Even though the fig trees have no blossoms and there are no grapes on the vines, even though the olive crop fails and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the fields and the cattle barns are empty, even though she doesn't come back, even though he still stays sick, even though that diagnosis still happens, even though we're broken and I can't see a way out, even though, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. Right? The Lord is my strength. It's an even if faith. It's an even if faith. Because sometimes we see all this evidence to the contrary. It looks like it's dark. It looks like Friday. It looks like Friday a lot of times. But we have an even if faith that said, even if it looks like Friday, then what? Then what? We have a turnaround God. Right, Angel? We have a turnaround God. That's the thing. Even if we disagree, even if we're distant, even if the Zimzum, if you have a question about Zimzum, talk to me afterwards if you have a couple of minutes. Even if the Zimzum is interrupted, even if we're broken, even if our relationship's broken, even if we have live in deep resentment, bitterness, even if we have in-laws, right? Even when the part of the vows is stuck on for worse, it seems right that his gifts, and let's just pick three, the Sabbath, marriage, and the church, would also be even if situations, right? Right? Even if. Even if you don't have time, here's a Sabbath for you. Even if you don't feel like it, here's a community of people who will die for you, who will go to the wall for you, who will lift you up. Of course he's in, of course in an even if faith, this is an even if situation. I don't think marriage was ever supposed to be easy. Even in Genesis 1 and 2, I don't think it was ever supposed to be easy. But if we keep showing up and agape-ing each other, it's just the best. I'm done. Unless you all want to go for another hour. I'm cool to do that. The thing is, of course, you know, we want to fight with Jesus on a lot of these things. I'll need you to walk up here or I'll just keep talking. Of course, when you look at these things, it feels like he's talking against you sometimes. It feels like you're far from God, but these things you know about Jesus, of course. Of course he would pick this side. Now, there are some other things we know about Jesus too, right? And that's what'll be part two, the day after Christmas. All right, amen.
Your heart, he knows your name.
is here.